Good morning and welcome to Radio Rehab. Your host this morning will be Miss Lisa Seif, who's the director of the Warrick County Court Substance Abuse Program. Like all our talk programs, we encourage you to call in to 424-1400 or 1-888-846-7867. This is a brand new program that we hope you'll definitely enjoy. And now, Radio Rehab with Lisa Seif.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Radio Rehab. It is good to be here to present to you a show and guests that want to share their experience, strength, and hope about recovery from substance abuse issues and just life in general. So this is a show where we talk about the real deal of trying to live one day at a time without picking up a mood-altering chemical. And these folks come and share from their hearts. So I am excited to introduce you today to three women who are happy, joyous, and free about not having to pick up a drink or drug today. Each of their stories has a different drug attached to it, but it's definitely the same story, the same cravings, and the same solutions. So they're here to share with us today. Welcome, you guys. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, Lisa.
What do you know? Why don't you go ahead and tell us a little about you? You're a real friend of Radio Rehab and mine, and then introduce some of the folks you sponsor.
Okay, well, I have this thing called addiction, addiction to everything. I have been in the program for, since I started this program in July 13th of 2005, so I have a little over 4 years.
That's awesome.
4.5 years. And throughout this program, you know, I've learned a lot about addiction and to all substances, how it deteriorates the mind, your thoughts, your actions, and how important things like treatment facilities and sponsorship and attending meetings and working the 12 steps of the program can literally change your life. And for me, the biggest thing that I stress is to work with the newcomers is sponsorship. You know, I have these two ladies that are here today are ladies that I'm sponsoring in the program. And we each have different type addictions, maybe different lifestyles, but similarities. And maybe, you know, we can talk about how it all comes together in recovery. Mm-hmm. So I brought with me Lisa and Jamie.
Hello.
Hello.
Hey, you guys. Thank you for coming.
Thanks for having us.
Don't be nervous. No one can see how how gorgeous we all are. So Jamie and Chanel, my friend, is with us too. Chanel Ragland, her mom's a real good friend of Radio Rehab and mine, and she's very involved with young people in the schools and has concerns about their substance use. And not those young people, huh, Chanel?
Right, those young people.
Yeah. So we have a great group of women today. And Kathy and I, in planning the show, thought, well, this is the month of Valentine's Day, so what greater way to talk about love than sponsorship and how we help others that are hurting from substance abuse issues. So tell us a little about you, Jamie, and then Lisa, a little about your story, and we'll see if we get callers. If not, I've got plenty of questions.
All right. Well, I'm going to start off with I'm an alcoholic addict, and I was brought to Stepping Stone August 28th. I was just a spiral mess completely with every kind of substance there was. It doesn't matter what you put in front of me, I wanted to do it. Anything that could shut reality off. And through rehab, I was introduced to the AA program. And it's been hard. The first month was real easy because you're with a group of people and you're all dealing with the same thing. And once you get out, once you get out of treatment, life happens, and that's definitely why I need a sponsor. Just typical moods that you go through every day, just to talk about and rationalize, and everything that I go through, my sponsor relates to and can have an answer or solution, or even just a page to pick up and read to feel better about myself. But my sobriety date has changed because I did pick up again. A lot of us in this world think that marijuana isn't a big issue, and for me it is. It's something that you think that you can keep going back to, and it just takes away a lot of who I am and the person that I realized who I was sober. And it was, I realized who I was sober and how much better I felt. And so picking up marijuana again really has shut me down from the program. And that's just where I'm at right now. I've got my sponsor here and I need to...
Well, Jamie, is it just that marijuana is so available and we're in a world that thinks marijuana is okay, that it's hard in recovery to include marijuana and all the other no-to-drug categories?
Definitely. You even almost feel even ashamed to talk about it, as if someone's going to look down on you. And there, I mean, everybody has different levels of addiction.
Absolutely.
Mine just happens to be something else, but it's very readily available. I mean, it revolved around my life in every way, shape, or form. Is even just being as far as an advocate for marijuana.
Yeah.
That's what my addiction was telling me it would be okay, because now I'm fighting for it and whatnot. And it doesn't matter what it is. If you do something too much, it's an addiction.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter. So that's where I'm at right now.
Well, thank you, and glad you're here.
Thank you.
I am Lisa, and my addiction is opiates. I started using painkillers in 2003. I had some medical issues, and once I started taking them, I did not stop. I abused them every day. I started abusing them about a year after I started taking them, and I have abused them ever since. If I could not get them legally, I got them illegally. I've stole them from people. I have stolen from family. I have hurt my family by doing this. I would have had 2 years clean this past January 17th, and I relapsed, and now I have almost 2 months clean.
Well, congrats.
My sobriety date is January 8th of 2010.
So you're the baby of the group.
A baby.
So is this another example of how easy it is to obtain that, like marijuana pills are just a prescription away?
It was easy for me to get them.
Yeah, from doctors?
I doctor hopped. I got them illegally through doctors, and that's what led me here. I obtained a prescription that was not in my name. And
how do you do that? You mean you give a false name?
Yeah. It was the name of a very, very close friend of mine.
Gotcha.
So
So you don't even have to go to a doctor in your real name.
No, I called them. I called them. I did it on the phone. They did it on the phone.
Called in a prescription?
Yes.
For
opiates? Ma'am. It was for a painkiller called Ultram.
Yeah.
And once I found that, I stuck with that. I didn't really, the Lortabs and other narcotics, I stayed away from. The Ultram was my worst addiction ever. Period. I was taking so many pills a day that it was not even funny. I was spending all day figuring out how to get them the next day. And I got the person that I got the prescription's name in, she found out and pressed charges. Mm. And while I was waiting, they had to issue a warrant. While I was waiting for that, I put myself through Stepping Stone. And then I went to jail in May of 08, and I was put on drug court. And I made it about 9 months on drug court, and once I figured out that Ultram did not show up on their drug screen, that was it. The next 6 months I used while I was on drug court.
Oh, my.
And then I took a pill. It was an amphetamine, and that one showed up.
Whoa.
And after 15 months of being on this program, and when you have a positive drug screen, you don't have 6 months from your graduation date, that they removed me from the program. And I sat in jail from October 1st until January 8th, thinking that, I mean, was scared to death because my lawyer told me I was going to prison.
Was that the first time you've ever been in jail?
No, I went to jail in May of 08, and stay there till July, and that's when they put me on the drug court program. I was on the drug court program from July of 08 to October of 09.
Have you guys ever been in jail?
Yes, you have.
Yes, I've been in jail on several occasions throughout my history for various reasons, theft, prostitution, and basically came close to going to prison for auto theft. And that was just making the wrong choice of, you know, borrowing someone's car, staying gone too long, and they reported it stolen, and I went through.
Don't you hate it when that happens? You were just trying
jail,
to borrow a
yes,
car.
Yes, and I called myself trying to help them to get money to get home by stealing, you know, and they panicked and reported their car stolen.
Hate it when that happens.
So is it just that the addicted mind can justify anything?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Theft.
There was a reason for everything.
And you showing up every day getting breathalyzed and drug screened. Did you feel guilty at all? No, or does the brain just clock out that you're even lying to anybody?
I felt more guilty towards my family.
Sure,
because
sure.
In my mind, I knew my mother knew. I knew my parents, maybe not so much my dad, but my mom knew. And my mom and dad, I go to them for everything.
Yeah.
And this time, I got myself in a bind that they could not pull me out of. And to be honest, I was almost relieved that I got caught
and got put in jail.
And that's awful to say. Mm-mm. I was telling that to my daughter, and she said she didn't want to hear it, but it's the truth. Mm-hmm. Because if I had not been put in jail,
Hello? Go ahead.
I can almost guarantee that I'd still be using.
Yeah,
I know
sure.
I would be because sure. I was getting away with it through drug court anyway.
Right.
You know,
at least legally getting away with it.
Well,
but
yeah, I mean,
morally, it was killing you to hurt your parents and lie and live that lie.
I don't know why, but it still didn't make me stop.
No, it won't. Yeah,
it didn't make me stop.
That's how powerful addiction is, isn't it?
It's awful.
Yes, I understand that because no matter what I went through or what I did, you know, I've even had white light experience where I've actually felt like I was dying and just somehow miraculously came out of it. And that didn't even, being that close to death and not knowing if you're going to survive or not, that didn't make me
That's
stop.
Not even a wake-up call,
yes,
yeah.
It wasn't a wake-up call at all. Prison, even the threat of prison and being in and out of jail, that didn't make me stop. The love of the guilt I experienced of hurting my family, you know, especially my children, it wasn't enough to make me stop.
There were two separate occasions that I took so many pills at a time that I had seizures on them.
Yeah. And that didn't make you quit?
No.
Mm-mm. What about you?
Nothing made me stop. I come from Colorado, and the laws have changed since the past few years, but I had received my first DUI in 2002, and 6 months later got another DUI. And at the time of my sentencing, I was 6 months pregnant. I don't know how or when, but I've been arrested 3 times and never spent a day in jail. I think that's why my addiction has carried on so long, is because I never had consequences. I have been able to do what I want, when I want, how I want for my whole life, because I was going to figure it out anyways. But
3 DUIs?
2 DUIs and a possession charge. And I never went to jail. I just had to pay a lot of money, a lot of fines. When I got sentenced, when I was 6 months pregnant, I was sentenced, and I was going to go to 30 days in jail, and the judge allowed me to do day reporting.
Because of being pregnant.
Yeah, so it was pretty embarrassing to be pregnant and go in and blow in a breathalyzer every day at the jail, but it still didn't stop me. I continued to use drugs through both of my pregnancies because I was selfish. I didn't want to stop.
Well, you were addicted.
Well, yeah, and there's nothing wrong with smoking marijuana. That's completely natural. God put it here. You just tell yourself anything and everything to make what you choose to be your addiction.
Absolutely.
So I'm lucky that I haven't had to go, but at the same time, I don't think I've had any consequences of my actions other than, you know, I've hurt my family, but no direct authority in my mm-hmm. life to say stop. It was mm-hmm. my husband and me who decided to go into treatment. Otherwise, I would have just kept going. I used my addictions to try to end my life. I didn't want to be here anymore, period, at all.
So you think your getting stoned every day was a way of slowly being suicidal?
Well, after the marijuana wasn't enough, I picked up drinking again. I did quit drinking when I had my kids, but the first day back at bartending and getting that sigh of relief, I didn't stop for 14 months. And then I picked up the methamphetamines again, and then I just figured out how to handle all my addictions. Well, if I'm too tired from this, I'll take this to be awake. God. If I'm too awake for this, I'll take this to come mm-hmm. back down. And that was my cycle for 14 months. And I was completely psychotic. My children and my husband had to deal with a psychotic woman.
It sounds like hell it on
was.
Earth,
it
what
was.
You guys are describing. And then people like Chanel, or and even me sometimes, we look at this and think, what in the world are they doing, these beautiful people? And you say no consequences, but these guys had consequences, and that didn't stop them. What does finally do it?
Surrendering.
Surrendering.
I agree with that. Surrender is the biggest thing, and I feel that the most hardest thing to do is to surrender. Because, like Jamie was saying, this thing in your mind that there was a period of time where I was continuously drinking. I had been through treatment. I continuously drank. And I felt like my mind was telling me that's okay because that's what others that I was around did, you know. But it's wrong to do the drugs. So I would quit doing the drugs, but I still drank. And then it came to that was enough. And I was gradually popping pills, but no one knew, you know. It was just like a normal thing to them. Oh, I'm just mm-hmm. I'm just drunk, you know. No, it was more than that, mm-hmm. you know. And your mind, no matter what the consequences are, because there was one time I can remember going to jail, actually spending 15 days in jail and getting out that morning and taking my commissary that I saved and straight to the dope house when they released me.
Is that what you knew you were going to do?
Yes.
Or,
yes.
So you knew the whole time you guys were in there when you got out. You never said never again or
I've
made
said
those
that,
broken promises?
I have said that, and I didn't follow through on it, you know. And while I was in there, people would talk to me about my addictions, but mm-hmm. it was like, yeah, I'm not going to do this again. Mm-hmm. And that morning, something changed to where I couldn't help myself.
The obsession
yes.
hadn't left.
Yes.
You can quiet the fire down, but the obsession hadn't been removed yet. Were you going to say
yeah.
something?
So what specific event or thought brought you to the place of surrender or made you finally say, okay, I'm going to surrender this?
Well, I have been through fear, been through pain. It's a thing of I got tired of living that way. And when I say tired, it was looking at my children, you know, not being there for them in the way I needed to be as a mother, not being able to financially support them, emotionally support them. And I didn't have no real friends, nobody I could trust. Nobody wanted to be bothered with me, you know. And I did not like myself, regardless to what I put on, clothing-wise, dressed myself up. I was miserable inside. I was just like a trap door, you know, and it came to the point where I knew that I needed help. You know, I tried to hang on to some faith when I was out there getting high and drinking, but I was hoping that someday, I knew deep in my conscious mind that someday that I was going to be relieved of it, but I just didn't know how. I didn't have the information that I needed, the help I needed, the correct help. Mm-hmm. You know, my family's love and support for me wasn't enough, right. You know, and I didn't know enough about AA to really give it a try. I had never tried the program. I've been in and out of treatment on four various occasions, But, and the fourth time, I got it right.
Mm-hmm. How about you guys? That's a good question. What was the surrendering point for you?
Mine was more of a divine intervention. I hadn't even realized I needed to surrender. I wasn't aware. I was so in myself and in my problems and what I was going to do that it was either AA surrendering, going to treatment, or putting myself in the state hospital because that's the only place I thought I was supposed to be.
You thought you were going crazy?
Oh, yeah. I accepted crazy as what I was. I mean, I started using when I was 15, and I have battled the depression for 15 years now. So I was just so used to it. I thought that's what my problem was
depression.
And I needed something to fix that. All I didn't know, I just had to put down. So for me, it was more of having to do it. I really didn't surrender. I was forced into treatment, but I thank God I was. Mm-hmm. If it wasn't for the people that stepped up and said something.
So treatment
I would
works.
Treatment definitely works completely.
I don't know, Chanel, do you hear that treatment doesn't work? I hear that at drug court all the time. I've been through treatment. That didn't work.
Right. I've heard different things. I think a lot of times it's whether or not it's coupled with some sort of self-help or where you get coping skills, because a lot of times people use the drugs because they don't know how to cope with their issues. And very often if they just get treatment for the biological part of it without also getting that social-emotional piece, then treatment maybe doesn't work for them.
Listen to her.
Thank you.
That's awesome. And she didn't even go to AA, and she knows that.
I have to agree with that. You know, I was sitting here agreeing, nodding my head, because I didn't quite know how to word it. But those are the things that I wanted my family to know, was that I didn't have coping skills, and it's not about how you raised me.
Right.
It's not your fault, you know, that I am the way I am, you know. But it's just managing those coping skills. Are just there. It's hard to explain it unless you've been there, you know. But I did not know how to cope with, especially dealing with my feelings.
No, you can cope with the addiction and lie, cheat, steal, prostitute, and you know, deal and everything else. But coping with the reality of life. Once you realize you have an addiction and have to treat it, you still need the coping skills to get through a day.
And I still need those today.
And you're right, Chanel. That's where the 12-step programs continue that process. Wow.
And it's hard for family members, because family members don't really know what to do, because all they see is your behavior with the drugs, and so they want to fix your behavior and what you're doing wrong. And it's hard for them to be supportive because, you know, they're in the middle of it with you. And I think a lot of times family members just don't know what to do. You know, they're at a loss.
They feel powerless, too.
Mm-hmm. Very much so.
So do your parents now know and understand addiction, Lisa?
In some ways, they do.
They don't really have to, like you
need
to know.
No, they don't have to. My mother has been through a lot of issues in her life with addiction, not herself, but with other family members. It's been a lifelong cycle for her, and she blames herself. Mm. For my problem.
That's what mothers do.
Well, and I can tell her, it's not your fault, but she's not ever going to feel any different.
Right.
She's not going to feel any different. They don't understand what it's like. I mean, until they
go
live
to Al-Anon
it.
Or family
They
homes?
Don't go to Al-Anon, but my mom and dad both go to meetings with me.
Great.
They go to my dad's a truck driver, so he's gone a lot, but if he's home, he goes to a meeting with me every Sunday. And my mom's went to him. And when I call them now, they want to pick up the phone because I'm not calling them and asking them for money or calling them and asking them for a ride.
Bail you out. Yeah.
And my mom told me one day, she said, well, if you ever need to talk, you can call me. I said, well, if I need to talk about something other than my problems, I'll call you. And I still call her with problems, but I call Kathy. Because she's been through what I've been through, that's what I have to do. I actually had Kathy as a sponsor the first time I went through AA, and I did not use her. I've used everybody that's ever been in my life in a bad way. I've used them for what I could get out of them. And if I can't use her now, you know, I have a reason to use somebody. And that's it's totally different. Sure. I want to pick up the phone and call her. And like I said, when I call my parents' house, they don't not answer the phone or hit the silent button on their cell phones.
Well, it's those little things that are important. Absolutely.
My mom never would do that, though. Right. She would always pick up that phone.
With fear. What's she going to tell
and
me this time?
She was just tired.
Of course.
You know, she was tired of bailing me out of problems that I got myself into and taking care of my kids when I wouldn't. Not that I couldn't, but I wouldn't.
Well, we've had family members on here before, siblings or parents, and they do. That's the common word is tired.
Yeah.
But what gets you to surrender when Chanel asks you that? You all were tired, sick and tired of being sick and tired. And I think families get that way too.
So how would you get, because I work a lot with teenagers. And I read an article recently about, people aging out of addictions, and it's that same concept of growing tired. But when you felt you were invincible when you were younger and, oh, I can get over this, or it's not that bad, and you've justified it all, what can we do as people that are involved in education or work with teens to try to keep them from having to spend years and years and getting that place of being tired and looking back at so much life that's gone? And trying to redeem all those situations or events later in life, and what would you recommend that we say to them? Or is there anything we can say?
I really don't. Right now I'm working with a couple of people in the community that it's starting in the making. It's a task force.
Marvelline?
Yeah, with Marvelline, Judge Trockman, and Sheriff Eric Williams. Mm-hmm. We're going to try to educate the community. And with this thing called a drug cancer, it's a long way out, but we're starting. And some of it has to do, what I'm learning from some of the others is that, some of these things really are starting in the home. It starts with the way you were reared as a child, because maybe your parents have not been through what you've been through. Or, I know from experience, I was raised with a single mother, a strong single mother, but yet and still I always felt, even today, that she doesn't understand me. She raised me, but she still doesn't know who I am. And that's okay, because she would never understand my feelings
So do we need to help young people understand that we understand them?
Yes.
Try to go to their world
it's
more?
It's very important to understand what a child is going through. Mm-hmm. I have two children that have, that are now legal adults. And when they come and talk to me, whether I agree with them or not, I listen and I try to understand and get involved in what is really going on inside of your mind. I take the time for that,
Validate them, even if you don't agree with
them. Doesn't mean I agree with what they're doing or their choices, and I did that throughout their years.
And sort of like when my dad used to say, Lisa, this is hurting me more than it's hurting you. And I was like, yeah, Dad, but not in the same place.
Right.
Well, wait a minute, Tri-State. We've just got to take a commercial. We are heating up. We're discussing how we can intervene with teens, how we know when we are at our bottom, and how we can help our families. So don't go away, Radio Rehab. We're just going to take a break and be right back.
Hey, you. Yeah, you listening to the radio. It's me again. Have you got that HIV test yet? As I mentioned before, if you have put yourself at risk by having unprotected sex with more than one person or used IV drugs, guess what? You've put yourself at risk for HIV. Make that appointment today by calling the Vandenberg County Health Department at 435-5683 or stop by 420 East Mulberry. It's that easy. Remember, everything is confidential. No one has to know you've gotten the test unless you tell them, so do it. What do you have to lose except maybe your life or your partner's life? When in doubt, get checked out.
Attention, this is a public announcement of an emergency liquidation. Creditors demand immediate liquidation of millions of dollars of inventory this weekend at the center in Evansville.
Big Fosgate and Kicker Amps, $99.
1,000-watt subs, $10.
Woofer boxes, $19.
Thousands of speakers, all sizes, $5. Dash, door, and rear.
Tweeters, $5.
Car CD players, $29.
MP3 car CD players, $39.
Car TVs and DVD players, $49.
Alpine,
Pioneer,
Kicker,
JL Audio,
Kenwood,
Audiobond,
Fosgate,
Sony,
Infinity.
Much more car audio this weekend to 80% off.
Brand name navigation systems, $59.
MP3 players, $9.
Video MP4s, $19.
Digital cameras, just $19.
Radar detectors, $29.
Hundreds of new video games, $10.
Guitar Hero, $29.
Xbox 360s, $149.
PSPs, just $89.
Huge computer liquidation.
Dell, HP, Compaq, Toshiba, Sony, much more.
It happens Friday, Saturday, and Sunday only.
The Center in Evansville.
Friday, noon to 10. Saturday, 10 to 9. Sunday, 11 to 7.
And back, talking 20% off over-the-counter medications this Thursday, Friday, Saturday at Rite Aid. You're on.
Oh, I feel bad. Are heartburn remedies included?
Yep, 20% off at Rite Aid. Next.
Yeah, how about pain relievers?
Positively.
Allergy?
Affirmative. Talk to me. We're waiting. Yes, even 20% off all cold and flu medicine this Thursday, Friday, Saturday at Rite Aid.
Valid on regularly priced in-store purchases only while supplies last. $10 minimum purchase required. No rain checks.
Babies are really incredible. It's also incredible how much stuff they need. So it's a good thing Walmart's having a February Baby Days event with unbelievable low prices on top-rated baby brands. Right now, you can get 23.2-ounce Similac Advanced Early Shield Powder Formula for just $21. Parents' Choice 72-count baby wipes for $1.97. And Huggies and Pampers big boxes of diapers for $25 at participating stores while supplies last and at Walmart.com. Formula not available at Walmart.com. See store for details. Save money. Live better. Walmart.
When you have a cold, what causes your worst sinus symptoms?
My stuffy nose is caused by mucus, isn't it?
Well, the real problem isn't always mucus. It's often nasal swelling caused by inflammation.
No wonder I can't blow my nose.
The right medicine for the real problem is Advil Cold and Sinus. The power of Advil plus a strong decongestant that reduces nasal swelling and relieves sinus pressure.
So I can breathe again.
Advil Cold and Sinus. The right medicine for the real problem. And great relief for flu season, too. Look for it at the pharmacy counter. Use as directed.
Every Wednesday, the Tom Joyner Morning Show grants another Christmas wish.
Please, 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 Mr. Joyner, I keep praying that you see my letter and grant my Christmas wish because I really need it. Tamika, gotcha. Merry Christmas.
The Christmas wish happens every Wednesday morning on the TJMS.
Those.
Attention, this is a public announcement of an emergency.
Well, we are back, Radio Rehab, and we have hot topics going on here from being mothers to being sisters and just being clean and sober and trying to make the world a better place. We, again, talked about sponsorship early on in the broadcast and want to talk the next half hour about sponsorship because it's really the key. Chanel asked our guests, how do you intervene with kids? You know, how do you make kids understand that they're on a destructive path? So maybe talking about sponsorship, maybe we need to sponsor our young people too in a way and validate and guide them. But the meditation that Kathy brought in was about sponsorship, and it says, how good a sponsor am I? When I bring new members to a meeting, do I feel any responsibility? Or do I make it my job to stay with them until they have either become good members of AA or have found another sponsor? If they don't show up for a meeting, do I say to myself, well, they've had it put to them, so if they don't want it, there's nothing more I can do? Or do I look to them and find them and give them a reason to come back into AA? Do I go out of my way to find out if there is anything more I can do to help? That is a great, great question for us to spend the rest of the half hour talking about. Do you ever give up on anybody, number one? And do we need to go out of our way, even when somebody acts like they don't want it? Do we continue to let them know we're available and that we care without overdoing it? So that's a great way to finish off our radio rehab show. How far do we go, and do we ever give up?
Well, Lisa, you know, I just experienced that recently with a lady I was working with. She's also a member of my church. She approached me, asked me to sponsor her, and then I started picking her up, showing her, the ropes. You know, these are the meetings that I attend. These are the people that I'm around, and this is what I do daily. You know, I brought her into my home and showed her, this is what I do daily in order to maintain, you know. And then I gave her the other side of it, which is, you know, I'm not letting working 12 hours a day or such and such, you know, certain friends, family, relationships get in the way of this. Mm-hmm. This has to come first. Well, she fell off, and then I think it was maybe a little while after that, a couple of weeks, she came back to me and asked me to sponsor her again. She realized she had messed up. She went back out. Okay, I started working with her again, and once again, I, you know, was showing her a little more, and she started, it's like a light went off, and she really started enjoying this, but it was her, the people she was around that she couldn't let go of, you know, and she's holding, you know, where she could actually go back to prison and finish up a lot of years, you know, she's got an opportunity here. So recently, one of her family members intervened and is working on trying to get her out of, you know, out of Evansville into a facility where her mother lives. And she's, you know, I haven't heard from her since, was it last week, that she just kind of fell off, you know, and she hasn't called me to let me know if she's okay, you know. And but going through those lengths, I never gave up on her. I never told her I wouldn't re-sponsor. I told her I'm always going to be here for her if she needs it. And actually, after this weekend, I'm going to call and check and see if she actually did it. Mm-hmm. You know, because I care enough to know that, she, you know, if I can do this, you can too. And I'm here for you if you need it.
So it's okay to keep calling, keep checking?
Yes.
Do you all agree? Keep after somebody. Don't let go completely.
Well, for me, if I had somebody who just let me go, I'd run. I would take it and I would leave. I need somebody who is constantly there for me on a daily basis, just to remind me of what I need to do. Because if I'm given any leeway, I'll take it and I'll go. So with my sponsor being Kathy. She's just real supportive, and she understands. I didn't think that I could talk to her about some things, and when I did sit down and talk to her, it relieved me of my burdens and made me feel a lot better. But you can only do so much for somebody, and if you keep trying, I think you'll let yourself down. So I think there's a point that you do have to stop and say, okay, I can't help this person. They've got the tools in front of them. They know what they need to do, and I'm here for them. But if they're not willing, then I think there's a time that you do have to stop. Because they're not ready.
I guess there's a difference between detaching with love and abandoning with disgust.
Right. Right.
What do you think, Lise?
I think there has to be a breaking point at some point in time.
If they keep using...
If I hear a lot of girls say that my sponsor told me to do this, my sponsor told me to do that. They're not your boss. They will suggest things to you and show you. By having a sponsor, you see that what they're doing is working for them. So it's a suggestion to you. Mm-hmm. Take it and you can have what they have. But if you don't want to take any suggestions at all, you're not going to make it. You have to put in that effort to get anywhere, and I didn't the first time.
Well, they suggest you pull the ripcord on the parachute, too. They just suggest that you pull that ripcord.
I mean, it's up to you whether you float or fall.
Mm-hmm.
So
sponsors should stick with you, never give up, but yet not rescue you either.
Right.
Every time.
They can't. You can't call them, can you do this for me? Can you do that for me? Can you take me here? Can you take me there? It's not their responsibility to get you to a meeting. It's not their responsibility to get you to probation or whatever the case may be,
or get
to
you out
work.
Of financial trouble or
right.
marital trouble.
You don't call them and ask them for money and rides here and rides there. I call Kathy every day, and if she's going to a meeting, she will take me with her.
Yeah.
You know, if she's going to one. But if not, it's up to me to find a meeting to go to and to get there. And I depended on one person for a ride, and that ride fell through. So I make sure that I get there. I hated riding the bus. Mm. I wouldn't go somewhere if I had to ride the bus.
Hmm. Just
because
the block.
I always had a reason, but I've rode the city bus more since January 8th than I have my whole life.
Got some new willingness.
Right. And because of that.
Shoot, you'll be driving that bus before it's over.
Right. Hey, new job. Where I work, the bus doesn't run after 6 o'clock, and I normally ride with a lady that comes right by where I live, so that's not a problem. Mm-hmm. But she didn't work one night, and my mom called me and asked me if I needed a ride home because I didn't call her and put her out or put her in a bind asking her for one.
You guys have really grown up. Is that sponsorship stuff more of learning new coping skills and just how to think like a grown-up in a response?
It's about having to grow up. I think all of us addicts have not wanted to move in life. We wanted to stay exactly where we're comfortable, and having to grow up and be a reliable adult is what this program has shown me. It's not just about being sober at all. It's about growing up and being accountable for life and wanting to be in life and a part of it.
You know, I want to say something about sponsorship myself. When I was in treatment, I had gotten a sponsor before I left treatment because that's what it suggests. That sponsor worked with me the first year, and if it wasn't for her, I probably wouldn't have survived that first year. I literally used my sponsor. I did what Lisa did, Jamie, you know. When Jamie does or doesn't do, or Lisa does or doesn't do, first thing they understand because is I say, hey, you're slacking, you know. And they know what that means.
Well, it's your sponsors are pretty honest about.
Back to what I was saying was, and when I got done with that sponsor, I went to another one and another one and another one. Well, the sponsor I have today, because I have grown in my program and I'm working with others, is I'm seeing... you know, if I get stuck, and I do because, you know, I still deal with my disease, you know, I if I can't reach my sponsor by phone, I call. I have all her numbers. I know where she works. You know, I know where she's at. And, you know, and she, when I'm down, you know, she picks me up. Or even if I'm up, she lifts me more. You know, and she's very supportive because she sees me everywhere. You know, I'm at conventions, I'm at, you know,
doing the deal.
Different meetings. Yeah. You know, and when I see something in the book, you know, if I can't reach, I'll text her, you know. So, I mean, I'm still going through great lengths. And if I can't reach her, I have a good supportive, you know, network of other women.
But Kathy's easy to sponsor because she has the willingness to do whatever she has to do, and it doesn't take that long to get you out of the ditch because you don't go in the ditch willingly anymore. So, yeah, the sponsorship relationship grows into a friendship and a beautiful, trusting, knowing each other's going to be okay kind of thing.
So how do you keep the boundary lines between being supportive and being enabling? Because I'm sure it's whenever you've been successful and you want to see someone else be successful, I could see where it would be maybe hard not to almost drag them along, like, you know, because you want it so bad for them, and there's that saying, never want something more for someone else than they want for themselves. But how do you, as a sponsor, keep that fine line and divide those?
Ooh. You enable the crap out of them, so you just can't help it anymore.
Okay.
Well, first of all, I set an example. You know, that's important. I keep the communication line open, you know. They have different lives, you know. I try to relate to what they've been through and what they're going through, And, you know, and it seems like I learned in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous that you're not always foolproof to remember things, you know. And I feel like they help me remember what I need to do by reminding them what they need to do. Mm-hmm. And if they're not doing it, it is their choice. Then you suffer the consequences, and I have to surrender to that because I can't afford to live like that anymore. Right. I know what I need to do, and if I'm passing you on this information that someone has passed on to me, then to get what I get, you need to do what I do.
I think the other thing the founders of Alcoholics Anonymous realized very early on, and sometimes we forget, is when Bill Wilson called Dr. Bob, it was because Bill Wilson was afraid he would drink if he didn't go reach out to someone else. Mm-hmm. So the whole motive is really to save my own butt. I'm here to help you. If you get it, great, but me sharing with you helps me, as you just said, Kathy. It keeps me sober today. And I think that's how the whole sponsorship relationship, that's the whole genesis of it. I'm here to help you because it helps keep me sober today. So it's kind of a self-caring motive. And when it gets to enabling, I think it starts to feel not healthy for me. Right. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. As long as it's enhancing my sobriety and I'm walking away from this sponsorship relationship feeling like, wow, I'm so grateful I'm sober today after talking to you. But if I'm hanging out with you and sponsoring you and feeling sicker all the time, then I'm enabling. Then I need to take care of my own sobriety, I think.
Yeah, there's been sponsees, I mean, that I have just said, hey, you know, I know they appreciate my help, but it's like that feeling that you were just talking about, Lisa, I just tell them, I can't help you.
Yeah.
But there is, maybe if I can't, there is someone
that will. Yeah.
If you need my help doing it, I'm always willing to do that also.
Yeah. And you always know in the doors of AA or NA that someone will be there to reach out. And that you don't always have to be the almighty one for that person, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but the one thing I still stress is you have to be willing and put the work in. Mm-hmm. It's not as simple as excusing, I've worked all day, I'm tired, you know, I've got other things I got to do. I got to get my kids. You know, like I tell them, I'm a parent. Grown or not, they still have needs.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
But there's times I'll talk to you after my meeting or call me before your meeting. You know. And there are times when outside influences, whether it's relationships of friends or relationships of the opposite sex, you know, same scenario. Once again, you're going to have to wait until I take care of me.
Got to put your sobriety first.
Yes. Mm-hmm. You know, even though I look okay, I still want to be okay.
I've seen, so have you, Chanel, in our program, a lot of moms put their kids first and they end up using again.
Right.
You were one of those, Jamie?
Yeah, I still am. I thank God I got Kathy, but I mean, it was important for me after I got a rehab to get right back into the family and make it all better.
Sure.
We have to have dinner together tonight. I have to cook. And she still stresses how recovery is more important than anything. And I'm still having a hard time with putting recovery first because I've done so much damage to the family and stuff. I try to repair it just with time with the kids and stuff. And my recovery has slacked because of that. So I know I need to step it up in that area, but I understand that. And obviously, I used again because you get too comfortable. You get really too comfortable. So, yes.
It does have to be. It's like cancer. It has to be the first priority.
Yeah, it does. It's hard. It's hard to make it the first priority when you want to get better. You're so used to being sick. Mm-hmm. You know how to get better, but it's almost like you don't want to. You just want to stay because it's comfortable.
And you battle depression, too, you said.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's been...
So you have two things to treat, an addictive disorder and depression.
Yeah.
But well, I think your depression won't kill you, but your addictive disorder will.
Yeah, but I get a lot of help for my depression through AA just by the the text. I mean, I don't think I need to go anywhere else to get cured for that. I think it's all linked together.
Mm-hmm. And you know, AA is on internet.
Mm-hmm.
And iPhones, you can text.
You can go to a meeting, any kind live meetings.
Yeah,
on the internet.
Yeah. So there's no excuse to not get to a meeting anymore.
Right.
Basically,
right.
You were talking real quick. We got just a few minutes about starting something for marijuana.
Yeah,
dependents.
I definitely love to start an MA. There's I think over 100 MA through the United States, and I've gone on the websites just to get started. And I really think that's something that Evansville needs is definitely Marijuana Anonymous.
Yes.
It's, you can't talk as openly, I don't think, about marijuana because it's not looked upon as that big of an issue.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of like, not like meth and crack. Mm-hmm. It's not like alcohol. It's not like the opiate. It is a world of its own kind of, but it's still an addiction.
Oh, completely.
The recovery's the same, but it
there's
would be...
not anything that I did different that someone who used crack or alcohol did.
Exactly.
We all look for it the same way.
Just
we
maybe
all
not
as
profoundly.
Much. Right.
Yeah.
So I'd love to start something like that and get
we
some
need
kids.
One, especially for young people.
Kids mm-hmm. need to get in that because I think society misleads them to think
well,
that
some
it's
like,
okay.
What is it, 70 or 80% of kids dropping out of high school are regular marijuana users.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's 7 out of 8 of 10 kids are smoking pot regularly.
Yeah, they don't believe it's addictive.
Right.
No.
Right.
And even
right.
with the law, you know, they've got it set up as misdemeanor, you know, convictions.
And in California,
yes,
it's legal.
You know,
it's legal in Colorado.
Yeah, so is alcohol, and look how many people it kills.
Oh,
there's
exactly.
just certain people
yeah.
that can't smoke pot. Some can, like drinking, but
I've
many
seen some
can.
Saying, yeah, I can use weed because, you know, I'm only going to get a misdemeanor for it, you know, mm-hmm. instead of a felony.
Mm-hmm. So. And some people justify it because they're not violent.
Right.
Oh, we're mellow. It's
that's
okay.
not true because
they claim.
Yeah, that's what
when
they claim.
When you don't mm-hmm. have marijuana, when you're a chronic user for 15 years and you don't have any, you don't want to wake up, you don't want to eat, you don't want to deal with your kids, you don't mm-hmm. want to deal with the world, and then when you get high,
that's
you
true.
Still don't want to deal with that anyways.
Mm,
I mean,
true.
So it's a vicious cycle of the same thing with or without
and
it.
And the same
it's
excuses.
Ridiculous.
They'll
exactly.
defend it to the end.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
Well, I wish you the greatest luck in starting yes. Marijuana Anonymous.
I would like to. I'm
definitely
keep me posted.
Yeah, let us know
yeah.
for sure. We need it. We need Pills
we
Anonymous.
Do.
I'm waiting for a show for compulsive talkers called On and On, and I'm going to join that. But.
Why is Kathy's pointing at me?
We've just got a few minutes left. Is there anything in closing? I want to read this prayer for the day, and then each of you say a little something, because this prayer is awesome. And I hope you all in the audience will say this prayer with us. It says, I pray that I may see something good in every person, even one I dislike, and that I may let God develop the good in that person. Wow. So you sometimes even have to sponsor and reach out to people you don't always like a lot also.
I'm one of those that, you know, I do exactly what that prayer says. I truly believe there is some sense of good in everybody,
mm-hmm.
no matter what goes on in their lives.
Yeah.
I never try to look at the outside. I look at what's on the inside of a person.
Yes, you do.
I'm still working on that one, honestly. Mm. I'm quick. When I meet someone for the first time, if there's something that like radiates off of them that I don't like, that's it. I start picking
just
it.
Shut down.
Every
yeah.
little thing. I'm working on it.
Good.
I have a problem with the word hate. I say hate a lot, and my mom still to this day says, don't say hate. Lisa, watch your mouth. I mean, but that's good. I mean, I'm getting to the point to where, I mean, I live in a facility right now. There's a lot of females. And I don't need to say anything else. But I'm working on it. I can go to my room and shut my door and not deal with it.
Well, I bet even those girls that you might hate for a minute, you would help if they needed you.
Absolutely.
That's the power of this thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the prayer.
But there's a point there, too, where I have to learn to say no sometimes.
Sure, sure.
Sometimes. You know, not all the time.
Yeah.
Because there may come a day that I need something.
Absolutely. Got to pay it forward every
yeah.
day. We'll just keep on helping and reaching out. Chanel, you're in a great opportunity in the school corporation to just be one person to model that.
Right. It's been great for me. This is my first time working with Lisa and being around people who have addictions, and it's been very enlightening. I actually enjoyed it a lot more. I enjoy it a lot more than I thought that I would. I didn't know, being had my little analytical brain, I didn't know how well I would would really understand and empathize. And I actually love it. I really
do. We love you.
Yeah, I'm fascinated. I love
it. I thought it was so awesome. You know, a social worker finishing her master's program, and then will be out in the field. She already is working for the school corporation. But here she wanted to learn about a part of the human dilemma that she didn't know a lot about, addictions. Yeah. And you're learning, huh?
I am. I'm learning.
It's awesome. She's putting a face on all of us. We love her. So she hangs out with us in Boonville, Indiana, Kath. Boonville, Indiana. Well, I guess we're almost at the end of our hour. What a wonderful opportunity of sharing. Does anybody have anything they want to say at all in closing about anything? Love, sponsorship, recovery?
I'd like to say, if everybody knows when they need help and it's a matter of reaching out for that help, because once you do have sobriety, you realize how much you want to live in life. Mm-hmm. Being sober is just so much different than using, even what substances you use. And if you need help, just get out there and reach for it.
And I just have to say one thing is, I love my sponsor.
And your sponsor loves you. And you all can find all of us in any of the 140 12-step meetings in Evansville, Indiana, and the tri-state during the week. So if you need to talk to any of us individually, you call the radio station here, the pump, and Ed or Allison will get a hold of us, 424-1400. We're available 24/7, and you'll be able to get this CD on the podcast of www.lisaseifcares.net by the middle of the week. And if you have any questions, comments, concerns, need help with an intervention, just need support, if you're ready to put your kid out or bring your kid in or your spouse, you call us. We'll share some of our experience, strength, and hope with you anytime. Thanks for tuning in today. We'll see you next week with Marvelline talking to us about her coalition and all the things she's watching happen in the community when it comes to this cancer called addiction. But until then, don't forget to do the next right thing.